Everyone, I'm Janet B, recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia. So tonight, we're going to talk about the promises. My second favorite line in the big book is on page 100. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. So like, I was thinking all these great things had happened, but the best thing of all is that we get a relationship with God. We get rocketed into the fourth dimension. The best way that I can think about it is like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz. You know, first she's in black and white, and then it changes to color. And that's what happens in our lives. But we don't have to wait till the end because the promises start right at the beginning. So I know last week we talked about, we've been talking about resentments and pride and fixing our mistakes with others. And now we're going to talk about those glorious, beautiful promises. So the first promises that the book talks about are with step two. There are really no step one promises. I'm just admitting that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. I mean, if I went to a doctor and admitted that I had diabetes and it made my life unmanageable, okay, I admitted it, but nothing changes. All that does is make me willing to do whatever I have to do the work. So remember, our big book tells us that our problem is lack of power. So what I need in order to recover is to get power. And these steps are a continuum. It's like we start out getting a little power, and then we get more and more power until we're transformed. I mean, real transformation, like caterpillar to butterfly type of stuff. So on page 46, it tells us that we get our first infusion of power with step two. I love that, like an infusion of power, like a pick line of grace from God right into my soul. It says, as soon as we admit the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we begin. See, we're just beginning here. We begin to be possessed of a new sense of power, right? That's my problem, lack of power. And that's what I start getting right at step two. Power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So once I say that maybe there's a God, and maybe this God can help me, I get a little bit of power and direction, just enough to get me to step three. Because that's where I start not only believing in God, but start acting the way that I think God would have me. Of course, we don't know everything God wants us to do, and we never will. But a friend of mine who was a recovered alcoholic said, any alcoholic, like the first day in AA, can stop lying and stop stealing. So we do what we know. We have to do that. I can believe in God, but if I'm lying, stealing, doing other things I know he wouldn't approve of, even with my very limited conception, right? We all know God doesn't want us to steal. If I am, I shouldn't expect any power. So now I believe in God. And I'm ready to surrender my life to him. The top of page 63 gives me more promises. It says we have a new employer, and they use a capital E, so that means God. Being all powerful, he provides what we need if. So when we see the word if, we know it's a conditional promise. I get what I need if I do two things. One, I keep close to him. And two, I perform his work well. So that's a secret in life, right? You know, the big secret, how to get everything we need in life, not what we want, unfortunately, or I would have a guarantee of clear blue skies and not an inch of snow on Saturday when I'm scheduled to fly out to Turks and Caicos. I'm not guaranteed that, but I'm guaranteed everything I need, which means calm and serenity and an ability to say, if I'm only on the beach for 6 days instead of seven, that's okay. My life is still charmed beyond measure. So we get what we need if we stay close to God and perform his work well. Then it says that established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves. So see, the spiritual experience is starting here. A spiritual experience is when God rewires my heart to make me more like him. So instead of being selfish and self-centered, like Janet on her own is, I become more tolerant and more loving, like my creator is. We become less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. So it's a natural result, like I become interested in it, right? Like when I was little, I was interested in collecting stamps and coins. You know, no one had to tell me, you get interested in that. I just thought it was cool. And so our souls change and we naturally become interested in seeing, what can I contribute to life? And now listen to this more. We're still just on step three promises. As we felt new power flow in. So we're getting more power. That pick line of grace just keeps on flowing. We got a little in step two, and now we get more. And we enjoy peace of mind. I didn't have that before, because before I did a third step, and every now and then, okay, more than every now and then, but afterwards, I still would sometimes try to control situations. But when we really do a step three, that's when we have peace of mind. That's why I can have 100% peace when I have no idea if I'm going to be leaving on my vacation Saturday. I can enjoy 100% peace when I wake up and I see a text from one of my kids. This just happened 2 or 3 days ago, from one of my kids that came in at 3 in the morning. College is awful. I don't want to be here. I want to come home. And instead of freaking out, I'm like, I have total peace. We enjoy peace of mind. We discover we can face life successfully. Even if one of my children had showed up on my doorstep in the middle of a college semester, I would have been able to face it successfully. By the way, didn't happen. It was just, you know, a fight with friends and all is well. All is well in college land. We become conscious of his presence. That means we start realizing, oh yeah, there really is a God. Not because we read it in some book, not because we see it in the faces of our fellows and the results there. We start being conscious of his presence. We're aware there is a God. And he's not just up in the clouds somewhere. He didn't just create the universe and is now spending the rest of eternity watching Netflix. He's involved. And it says we begin to lose our fear. We begin to lose our fear. And this is what it says of three things: today, tomorrow, because, right, we're not trying to run the show. So we're not worried about tomorrow, not worried about the airplane going to Turks and Caicos, not worried about whether my kids are going to finish out the semester or the hereafter. I was someone who was always terrified that 5 minutes after I died, God was going to be up there with this book. And on one side would be a list of all the good things I've done. And on the other side would be a list of all the bad things I've done. And the bad would outweigh the good. It might even now, but I don't keep track anymore. And I don't worry about it anymore. That's a promise. We lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We are reborn. This is just step three, guys, reborn. Once we commit our lives to God, it's like we're consecrating ourselves to him. We're not ours anymore, we're his. We're reborn as his. And then the fourth step promises on the bottom of page 70. It says, we've now begun to comprehend the terrible destructiveness of our resentments and have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. It also says we've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about ourselves. So this usually isn't pleasant. This is usually when we sit there and we see, oh my gosh, like I am really not the nice person who's just a victim of everyone else, that including the weather, that I thought I was. We realize that's not true. But it says, page 71, that the founders of this program hope that now we're convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked us from him. So now we're going beyond belief. We start having trust. And then my favorite, the awesome step five promises. They're my favorite out of all of them. After step five, we're told that we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. That was my experience. I felt as if I'd been nearsighted all my life and someone just gave me a pair of glasses. The only way I can describe it is to just say, trees looked greener. Yep. So I see some people nodding. If you've done this, you know exactly what I mean. Again, it's like Dorothy going from black and white and then to color. Life starts to be in color. It says we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. We don't need to have this frantic activity all the time. It's okay. We can be alone because we know we're not alone. Our fears fall from us. What a great visual that is. I love the beach. And, you know, I was in Aruba a few months ago and we'd come up from the beach and brush off our bathing suits and the sand would just fall from us. That's what happens here. Our fears fall from us. Now, we know when we brush off the sand, we may not get every little grain of sand. It's kind of a process. So too with our fear. So we shouldn't expect like, okay, I'm working these steps. I did step five. My fears are better, but they're not gone. Oh crap, I'm a mess. No. You know, the book says we begin to lose our fear. Okay, so it gets better. So don't freak out if you still have fears. That's normal. But our fears fall from us. And then this, we begin to feel the nearness of our creator. So not just an awareness, we know that he's near us. So whether I'm going through surgery or the pain of rejection, God's right near me. It says we may have always had certain spiritual beliefs. And that was me. I never heard the term before, practical agnostic, but that was me. I believed in God, but that knowledge did nothing for me. It made no difference in my life. Just like if I were a diabetic and believed that insulin could help, but never injected insulin into my arm, it would do me no good. So we had beliefs before, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience, God rewiring our hearts. And remember, hearts that are rewired, you know, we have a new soul soil. And in that kind of healthy soul soil, the illness can't thrive. It can't grow. So then it says the feeling that the drink problem, or for us, the food problem has disappeared, vanished, will often come strongly, often. So I take that to mean more than 50% of the time, we're not obsessing about food. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. This is just step five, where the miracle starts. So I'm going to jump. The book doesn't talk much about 6 and 7 step promises, but if you want to go deeper into it, you can take a look at the AA 12 and 12, especially where it talks about a deepening of humility, a feeling that we could really be forgiven. The ability to forgive. Those all come with 6 and 7. And then after the amends, we get the promises that we're also familiar with that start on the bottom of page 83. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. So again, we have to have done the work so far. Now, we could get into all sorts of debates about what does it mean to be halfway through? This is step 9. So does this mean at step 4.5? Does it mean halfway through the amends? And I've resigned from the debating society. I take this to mean as we're working our way through, as we're getting through the amends, that this is what we can expect. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. So it just keeps getting better, right? We, you know, we're happy before, we have freedom before. Now it's new and improved. It keeps getting better. We won't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. Why? Because it tells us, because no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. So that's why I don't regret the past, because when I talk about some of the things that I've done, it's going to help another person. I've shared before that one thing I did is I faked a rape, and I actually sponsored someone, and she said to me, I did that too. You know, me sharing it, you know, hopefully gave her courage to be able to share something she had done that was similar. And right after it says, "No, we will see how our experience can benefit others," it says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Well, why? Because we see how our experience can benefit others. And so we're helpful. We don't feel useless anymore. And we don't have self-pity because we're filled with gratitude. If we're not filled with gratitude, that is something that we can practice, right? We can practice every day, you know, making a list of 5 to 10 things that we're thankful for, and not just listing them, but then actually saying, thank you to God. God, thank you for all these things. And that's the antidote to self-pity. My sponsor says, self-pity is the devil. And I had a friend say, self-pity parties always end with a cake. So however you want to look at it, we are people who cannot indulge in self-pity. And it tells us we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. So remember, we have the formula for serenity if it ever leaves us, right? Back on page 68, it says, just to the extent that we do as we think he, meaning God, would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. So I do what I think his will for me is, and I trust him with the results, and then I can have serenity. And it tells us again, a result. We lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Look at that word, our whole attitude, like entirely. It's like we get brand new hearts here. Fear of people leaves us. Fear of economic insecurity leaves us. Of course it does. We have an employer with a capital E. And it says, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. So we get like this sixth sense. Not always. There are plenty of times I have to call my therapist or call a fellow or call my sponsor, but I can handle way more than I used to be able to. And it says, we realize God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. You know, a lot of us have been to therapy for years, and then we work these steps and we see like in 2 or 3 months, more progress than we had in lots of years. And it says, these are not extravagant promises. It says they are being fulfilled, meaning we don't fulfill them. They're fulfilled. They're done to us by God. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But then here's the promise of promises. They will always materialize if we work for them. And the last paragraph on page 84, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, or for us, even food. I skipped the step 10 paragraph, Melissa. I'm leaving that for you for Monday. So, but here's the promise. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. Okay, where have we heard them talk about like not having sanity? And it's only 60 pages back, right? We're on page 24, where they talk about we're unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. And it says, there is the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps us from putting our hand on a hot stove. But what does it say now? We will seldom be interested in liquor, or for us, food not on our food plan. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. So page 24, we forget that if we put our hand on a hot flame, it burns us. And now it doesn't say we remember. It says it's automatic. So remember at step five, it says the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, like often. But now we've progressed in our recoveries. Sanity has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. I say for us, food not on our food plan. That's what sanity means. Two things. One, we'll seldom be interested in food not on our food plan. And two, if we are ever tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find this has happened automatically. We have a new bridge. We've talked before about how the insanity is that the bridge, the connection between our memory and our conscious mind when it comes to remembering how our binge foods or eating too much hurts us. The memories can't get across to our conscious mind to stop us. So we need a new bridge, and that's a bridge to God. And these first nine steps are how we build our bridge. So we've got a bridge now. And we have page 85. We have a new attitude toward liquor, toward food. And how did we get it? What does it say? Our new attitude toward liquor, food, has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. It is 100% a gift. It is not the result of this, you know, Shakespearean fourth step that I wrote, or me humbling myself to make amends. It's a gift. I guess all those things are me telling God that I really want the gift and that I'm not going to abuse it and that I'm going to cooperate with the grace he gives me. It's given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. And then the word they use, that is the miracle of it. We say here, this program isn't about tools and rules. There may be a place for them, but at its essence, this program is about miracles. Miracles. So it says, it just comes. That's the miracle. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. Now, sometimes at the beginning, we do have to put up a fight and we do have to avoid temptation. Remember, these are the nine-step promises. But when we first start, you know, we're not going to keep bags and gallons of our binge food in our freezers and our cupboards. We're just not going to do it. You know, we avoid places of temptation. When I was early on, just getting started, I remember I was at work and they were having a company pizza party. And I just sat in the back room by myself eating my lunch. I couldn't be around it. So we do what we have, and we put up a fight when temptation comes. We call, we pray, we do things to help other people. But now it just comes. Now we still call and pray and help other people, but it's generally out of a feeling of gratitude. We want to give back. And it says, we feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, placed by God in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. So sometimes people say, you know, when you say, oh, how are you? And they say, yeah, I'm doing good. Like, I'm good. I'm doing good. And I always like to say, it's not so much that we're doing good. We're protected. We're protected. And what does it mean to be protected? Well, I like to think of it like this, that, you know, in the old days, they're like the kings and, you know, he had all these serfs working his land and the serfs would be there. And in exchange for, you know, being under the king's rule, the king protected them. So when the armies would come from the north and south, the king would, you know, have the drawbridges raised. And if you were on the king's land, you were protected. If you wandered off the king's land, then when the attacking army came, you'd be vulnerable. You wouldn't be protected, not because the king didn't care about you, but because you wandered off the land. As long as I stay on the king's land, in the middle of God's will, I am safe and protected. And it says, we don't need to swear off, right? That never worked for us anyway, right? When we say, I promise I'm not going to touch another fill in the blank again. It never worked. So yeah, we don't swear off. The problem is removed. Again, we're passive, removed by God. It doesn't exist for us. We're not cocky, right? Cocky would be, I always think of it like this. If there's a flood and the police are out with bullhorns saying, the helicopters are coming, everyone get to the roof. It's my job to climb to the roof. But being cocky would be for me to say, I rescued myself, instead of just being filled with gratitude to those guys in the helicopter who rescued me. Okay. We're not cocky and we're not afraid. We don't walk around afraid that we're going to binge again, because we know that if we're doing this work, we're okay. If we're afraid, I would say generally it's because we have some dishonesty we're not coming clean about, right? Earlier on, I think it's chapter 5, it says that the alcoholic has his stage character that he likes other people to see, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. And that makes for fear and tension, and that leads to more drinking. So whatever we do, we are people who have to be honest. And then we're not cocky, we're not afraid. That's our experience. And that's how we act so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And then it tells us the one thing I think that they tell us is easy, to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. That's easy, to stop doing the work. The first 9 steps, we build our bridge to God. You know, steps 4 through 9, we clear away the wreckage of our past. And then we have our sturdy bridge. Step 10, which Melissa's going to talk about on Monday, we clear away the wreckage of our day. Step 11, we pray and meditate for God to fill us, to know his will, to fill us. And then step 12, we overflow onto others and help them build their bridges. This book promises that we will be rocketed into a fourth dimension that we can't even understand, that we can only dream about. These promises are real. They do happen. If you're new, if you're struggling, if you think there's no way, stick around. Put your name and number in the chat. Call people who've put their names and numbers in the chat. Reach out, because you will find that it's like crazy, but this program is a formula for a miracle. It's a formula for making caterpillars into butterflies. And these promises really do come true. And with that, I pass.